you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning, everyone. Pleasure to be here with you today. Welcome to the 2A Radio Show. I want to discuss something that happens with unknowledgeable shooters or people who just don't seem to take the time to do something properly. Or, third option would be, somebody just simply doesn't know how to do something properly. That happens to do with negligent discharges with the Glock semi-automatic pistol. It really doesn't matter what caliber because they all operate the same. Now, let me qualify the term negligent discharge. An accidental discharge is commonly referred to as when a gun goes off when you don't want it to go off. In fact, an accidental discharge would only be caused by an unhandled gun, generally, that had no finger on the trigger whatsoever. Those are almost completely non-existent and would nearly always be a problem with the ammunition and or the firing pin or striker of the gun. Negligence is generally what causes a gun to go bang when you otherwise would not want it to go bang. So that's what we're talking about. Negligent discharges. Accidental almost do not exist. The last time I know of an accidental discharge is a guy that I know that had a 50 caliber rifle that the firing pin was still pushing forward. And when he went to load the new 50 BMG round into this single shot rifle, it went, and it cost him an eye. And that was about two years ago. Anyhow, with the Glock semi-automatic pistols, you have to press the trigger in order to release the slide, take the gun apart and clean it, and do your basic maintenance. If you don't check the chamber to ensure that the chamber is empty before you do this, the gun goes bang. And I get emails every few months showing somebody that put a hole through their hand. The most recent one was through their foot. Sometimes it's down the leg. And they're putting holes into themselves because they're taking the magazine out, not checking the chamber, pressing the trigger so they can take the gun apart with some body part in front of the muzzle, having never checked the chamber. Let me tell you how simple it is to check a chamber. You reach over the top of the slide, over those grasping grooves towards the rear. It's behind the ejection port. Don't cover the ejection port. Behind the ejection port. Basically over the rear sight for the most part. Put your palm on one side, your fingers on the other. Don't do the slingshot method with the index finger and the thumb. Pull it back and look into the chamber. Matter of fact, I don't care. Go ahead. Use the index finger and the thumb. Turn the gun sideways so the ejection port is facing up so you can see it. Index finger and thumb, if you like. Pull it back about a half an inch. If you see brass, then the chamber is loaded. And look down into the chamber to make sure there's no brass sitting there that maybe had a dirty or busted extractor left around there. If you see brass there, unload the gun before depressing the trigger to release the slide. If everybody who owned or operated a Glock pistol just heard this information and would practice this before they disassemble a Glock, we never have to see those emails or hear about it again. That's all you've got to do. More good information coming your way after the break.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back from the break. Little piece of legislation that's going through. I'd like to read this story to you. Representative Jack Space's ATF reform legislation gains support of 100 defenders of the Second Amendment. Listen to this. Hailing a major milestone in the effort to protect law-abiding gun dealers from excessive and overzealous actions on the part of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, which is the BATFE, Congressman Zach Space from Ohio today announced that his BATFE reform legislation has gained the support of over 100 members of Congress. While the size of a co-sponsorship list does not guarantee a vote on the bill, gaining 100 bipartisan co-sponsors shows widespread support and momentum. Here's a quote from Zach. My colleagues are waking up to the assault on the Second Amendment being perpetrated by a culture within the ATF that rewards agents for denying gun licenses, Space said. I applaud their willingness to stand up to protect law-abiding citizens from overzealous federal agents. Every day that goes by without action on this issue is another day of lost liberty. ATF reform cannot wait. Crossing this milestone will only redouble my efforts to show House leadership that we are serious about this bill, Space continued. How about that? Good stuff coming out of the representative from Ohio. Reforming the ATF, and he's continuing to push to get more and more support before he actually pushes this bill for a vote. The bipartisan BATFE Reform and Firearms Modernization Act of 2009, which Space introduced with Representative Steve King from Iowa, would replace the all-or-nothing rules for punishment of a graduated system, remove promotion guidelines that reward agents for the quality of arrests and citations, and it would require the BATFE to establish intent behind minor violations. BATFE regulations now are so restrictive that if a person writes Y instead of yes on a gun purchase form, the application is frequently rejected. Imagine that. And these are the guys that actually, it's essentially a commission structure when it comes to their careers. The more that they try to hose people or screw over gun dealers, the better their chances of promotion and therefore getting a raise. It's a commission structure. The more that you abuse everything that we've got, all the tools at hand, the better you personally will end up. Now, this is being fostered within a federal law enforcement agency. The single and sole agency in the entire U.S. whose goal, job, and just direction, mission statement, is to screw you out of your guns by any means necessary. If that includes taking down dealers that you would buy guns from, fine. If it's you personally, fine. Doesn't matter. That's what their mission is. I truly call BATF Bureaucrats Against True Freedom. That's really what I believe it stands for. It's unreal. This legislation would do the following things. Create a system to provide more flexibility in punishing those who are found to have violated gun sales laws. Establish a solid legal requirement for determining the willful violation of laws. Create specific sentencing guidelines for dangerous felons convicted of a gun offense. Set limitations on the availability of electronic gun owners' information to protect the privacy of law-abiding citizens. Allow security companies and ammunition manufacturers to purchase machine guns for product testing and international security personnel training. Ease the restriction on the importation of replacement parts for semi-automatic rifles. Direct that a suspension or fine be vacated if a court determines a licensee did not fully violate the law, with attorney's fees awarded to a cleared defendant. Now, I like that one. That means that if the ATF goes for a wrongful or far outlandish prosecution, and they lose, and it's clear that it was a vindictive sort of prosecution, they have to pay the attorney's fees out of the federal coffer. That'll start getting them into some hot water. Also, to direct that the number of warnings, amount of fines, or suspensions or revocations shall not be a factor in firing, promoting, or transferring agents. Although not identical, this legislation is similar to a bill Congressman Space and Steve King from Iowa introduced during the 110th Congress. So there you go. What do you think about reforming the ATF, guys? Well, I think it is a hell of an idea. They cannot stand Americans' gun rights. They get promoted. They get extra money. They get all kinds of nifty little commission-type bonuses when they go after gun dealers and gun buyers. I can only imagine what sort of spiffs are in order for those BATFE jackasses running up and down the border states, pounding on doors of people who bought guns, saying, we would like permission to see your guns and the serial numbers. I don't even know if they're saying we'd like permission. I think they're saying something along the lines of, we're from the ATF. We understand that you purchased some firearms recently from, you know, Fred's gun store or wherever. And we would like to confirm that you've got those guns and the serial numbers. I don't know if they're actually asking any questions. I think they're just making statements. To ask a question requires to give an answer. To make a statement does not. You tell them something like that, like, you know, I'm Special Agent Jackass from the ATF, and this is my younger brother and his little cousin, and we're here to inspect the numbers of the guns you recently purchased from Fred's gun shop. If you would please bring those out for us to inspect, or if you would allow us in to inspect those. There's no questions involved there. It's just statements. And this is what's going on in some of the border states. We're getting this from different NRA members that have contacted the NRA. They've published this information. Texas, Arizona, both getting hit quite heavily with this sort of action. I'd almost like to move to El Paso for a few weeks, establish residency, go buy up all kinds of different guns at different gun stores, maybe three or four at a time, the type that they might think could end up crossing the border in the hands of the Mexican drug cartel and have them come knocking on my door. I'd give them a little bit of a lesson in the law. And I'd also give them a little lesson in what harassment is all about. And I'd take their names and I'd publish everything that I could and speak it to you right here on the show. If anyone out there has been a victim of this or knows anyone, friend or family or acquaintance, that's been a victim of this sort of knock and talk by the ATF, please have them email me, bill@2aradio.com, or call the show. I'd like them to email me. That way I can get a dialogue going with them and have them as a guest on the show. I want to hear their story. I would love to broadcast the story of someone who's had this happen in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, or California, wherever it's happened. I wouldn't think it's happened too much in California. It's tough to even buy a gun in California. Why ATF would even bother? I mean, the state is disarming people. They don't need the ATF to disarm people. So if something like that's happened with you, please, or somebody that you know, please email me. I'd like to hear about this. There is a new law that's being introduced as an amendment, kind of a rider, if you will, in the U.S. Senate. Now, I found this on an anti-gun website, so it's good information. Basically, what it is it would mandate that states that allow concealed weapons in their state must offer reciprocity to all other CCW holders throughout the U.S. Like, the state of Nevada recently removed Utah and Florida from the approved CCW list as of July 1st. And they said that they removed Florida because their CCW lasts for 7 years as opposed to five, which is in Nevada. Needs to be quite similar. Big deal. And then in Utah, which is a five-year permit, but they don't actually have to shoot to get that permit, which I think is a big mistake. I believe not shooting is the big mistake. So anyhow, if you have a Utah permit or a Florida permit, you were able to carry in Nevada for a while, almost 2 years, but you can't now. This legislation would say that, yeah, you have to do that. Now, kind of a plus and minus on this deal. The plus is, if you've got a CCW, you can carry in any other state that offers it. The minus is, the federal government really has no authority to do this. With the 10th Amendment, the federal government cannot force states to do this. So, for that matter, I don't like the law. I don't like it at all. And I've got to take the higher ground on this. Although, with my CCWs, I'd like to be able to carry anywhere I go. However, I don't think this is the way to do it. When we return from, by the way, that we're going to talk about this again towards the end of the show. It's called S-485. When we return from the break, I'm going to play for you a song called Born Again American. I think you might enjoy this. This is the first song I know of that actually addresses what's been going on in America recently and really kind of the political environment and the state that we're in as a nation. So that'll be coming up. That'll fill up segment three. More when we return.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carr.
Just a working man without a job. Got shipped off to China via Washington, D.C. And I know I'm nothing special. There are plenty more like me, but just the same. I thought I knew the rules of the game. Stood up for this country that I love. I came back from the desert to a wife and kids to feed. I'm not saying Uncle Sam should give me what I need, my offer stands. I blow my wage, you give me half a chance. And I went up to a congressman and said to him, you know, our government is letting people down. He said he'd need a lot of help to buck the status quo. I said there was a bunch of us around. I'm a born again American, conceived in liberty. My Bible and the Bill of Rights country's soul is on the line. She's hungering for something that she lost along the way. The principle the framers called upon us to obey, that in this land the people's will must have the upper hand.
And took a sacred vow, and faithful to that vow I have remained. I hear the call, and once again my country needs me now, and to her call I have been reordained.
I'm born again, American, conceived in liberty.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
I hope that you enjoyed that song, Born Again American. That came off bornagainamerican.org. There's actually a video to go with it. You need streaming high-speed internet access in order to see the entire thing uninterrupted. But it's very interesting. You've got every demographic across America represented. People from different nations that are here in the U.S., people that were born here in the U.S., just race, age, gender, all mixed up. Everybody from all over the country coming together, creating that song. And it really speaks quite loudly to what's been happening in the U.S. as of late. If you believe that the country is getting better day by day, week by week, month by month, then I'm happy for you in whatever little world it is that you live. For the vast majority of us, it's getting worse. And it's been getting worse on an exponential scale ever since the Obama regime took over in the U.S. It was essentially a hostile takeover of what happened with our political system, and that was the result. It took over the White House. We don't have many friends when it comes to anybody on Capitol Hill of the 535 people that are involved in the politics of this country when it comes to Capitol Hill. The 545 altogether, if you want to include the president and the nine justices of the Supreme Court, has been a sad, sordid affair recently. It's really been a sad event. Today, riot of the day comes from an emailer, a listener who emailed me something called Principle of Progressive Politics. For peace and justice to be realized, white people must be reduced to a minority. By a fellow by the name of Fernando Pena. I can only imagine that Fernando Pena is of Hispanic descent. Before I read this, I want to give you full disclosure. I am an American-born white male in his late 30s. Okay? So now I'm going to read this as it was written by Fernando Pena. Susan Sontag once wrote, "The white race is the cancer of humanity. I must confess that I agree." It may sound harsh, but when one objectively analyzes the myriad of crimes committed by whites against people of color, Ms. Sontag's statement is obvious. For the past 2,000 years, white crimes against people of color include slavery, imperialism and conquest, colonization, theft of resources, racism and discrimination, theft of dignity, robbing of language and culture. The list is endless. Wherever white people settle, i.e. invade, they oppress, enslave, and abuse the indigenous non-white population. Western civilization is culturally wired for crimes against humanity. Some progressives, now keep in mind, the word progressive means ultra-liberal socialist. That's what progressive means. It's a code word. Some ultra-liberal socialists is what he's talking about now. Some progressives have stated that white people are genetically, i.e. biologically, wired for racism and oppression. I tend to think the problem is culturally rooted. Specifically, the problem with white people is the following. Whites are the embodiment of Western civilization, and Western civilization is inherently based on greed, selfishness, oppression, racism, anti-Semitism, and murder. The history of the Western world is a never-ending sequence of horrific crimes against humanity. Whites must be reduced to a minority. White people have had 2,000 years to change their ways, and yet they have not. Whites seem unable to practice justice and fairness. Therefore, the only solution is to reduce whites to a minority wherever they are presently a majority: the USA, Canada, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, etc. The sooner whites are reduced to a minority, the sooner the world can be remade into a unified global society based on justice and dignity, a world free of war and conflict. In such a world, the natural instincts inherent to people of color, e.g. sharing, justice, peace, fairness, etc., will then finally be free to flourish. Lastly, the fewer white people in the world, the less chance they'll have to reemerge and restart their oppressive and racist ways. Sadly, this is the only solution, and however the solution is realized is justified: large-scale non-white immigration, birth control, abortion, etc. By Fernando Pena. I'd love to find this guy and talk to him. The fact of the matter is there's probably about 500,000 Fernando Peñas in the U.S. right now. You know, I'm not even sure where to start with this. It's very difficult. I guess I'll have to start with a study that was done here in the U.S. that looked at different portions of society by race and national origin. Okay, we'll start with this. Essentially, the study, I'm paraphrasing all of this, but essentially the study said if you take a neighborhood, constructed a neighborhood, you had a few businesses, you know, just a small community of, say, I think it was about 5,000 people is what they said. If you take a small community of about 5,000 people and you build it, have everything there, and you just at one time move a bunch of whites in there, the community will do just fine. If you take that same community and put in a whole bunch of Asians in there, the community will do just fine. If you take that community and you ingest it with a whole bunch of blacks, the community will actually degrade in value and opulence. It will actually go down. If you put in a whole bunch of Hispanics, the same thing is going to degrade and go down. If you do the same thing with a Muslim population, Middle Eastern population, it will degrade and go down. Now, it went on and on. It had several different in there. But those are the main things that we're worried about here in the U.S. What they're saying is you get a group of like-minded people together, and you will see what happens. Now, it was they wrote it theoretically as though you built a community and put X number of people in there. But what they're looking at is where these different sorts of, national origins or races, the way that they conduct themselves in different pods, different areas, different societies, different segments across America. And this is how they came up with their data. Some college, some university that did this study on racism and national origin, and when you get people of the same like-minded mindset, same color, same national origin, all together, do they flourish or do they pretty much implode? And Fernando Pena, if in fact you are Hispanic, it shows that the Hispanic population would actually start with something decent and it would reverse itself. The same thing with African American and the same thing with Middle Eastern descent. Now, again, this is all theoretical based on things that they see around the country. I would like to point out that any country that is any nation that's been settled and flourished by the whites has actually flourished and done better and created a better way of living, a better quality of life. I refer you to the nation of Liberia on the African continent. Liberia was settled by freed black slaves after the Emancipation Proclamation. And they wanted to go back to the motherland of Africa. Now, keep in mind, the slave traders were all black as well. The slave traders, oftentimes, were actually tribal leaders that were trading slaves on with ship captains, which oftentimes were black, coming over from Africa to sell slaves here in America. Now, of course, then the whites who would actually have these slaves, no good information out of that either. Now, that whole thing sucks. I don't condone it. It's a black eye on American society, and it's a black eye on the world when there's slavery anywhere, and there's slavery all over the world. The majority of the slavery that's going on around the world is not conducted nor condoned by the whites, Fernando. Keeping this in mind, the freed black slaves that wanted to go back to the continent of Africa settled a country by the name of Liberia. Liberia has been oppressed by one ruthless dictator after another for the last 150 years. Well, 140 years, however long it's been around. They have never actually had any true liberty. Their quality of life is far, far inferior to that they would experience in the U.S. I would challenge that with any nation in Africa. As a matter of fact, I'd challenge it with almost any nation. If you actually want to make this, Fernando, a race-related incident, which obviously you do, because you say the only solution, let me see here, the only solution is realized is justified. However, this solution is realized and is justified. Large-scale, non-white immigration, birth control, abortion, etc. Basically, what you're doing is you're condoning murder and kill the white man. And, Fernando, that, could you imagine if a white person wrote this towards Hispanics or Middle Easterns or blacks or Asians or, say, I don't know, of any one nation, say, of Australia, the people in Australia, we need to get rid of all of them, or maybe the nation of Zimbabwe, or the nation of Iran. Can you imagine if a white man wrote something similar to this towards you, Hispanics? And I'm only estimating you're Hispanic by your name. We can actually see this same attitude in Judge Sonia Sotomayor, who's saying that a wise Latina woman can make a much more well-rounded and informed decision than a white man. A wise Latina woman. So she's gone to college. She's of Hispanic origin, and she's female, has indoor plumbing as opposed to outdoor plumbing. She can now make a better decision than a guy who's white and has outdoor plumbing. Now, this is nothing but pure and simple racism. It's just pure and simple racism. And I got to tell you, the white population has been apologizing for the stereotype that they are somehow the ultimate racist organization that oppresses and puts down every other race and national origin. Well, I got to tell you, I've never done that. And I am not going to sit here and have to apologize for anything. I'm not. I've never done this. As a matter of fact, my mother does genealogy and family history on her side and my father's side. And nothing shows that anybody in my family history has ever had slavery. Certainly not in this country. They were never wealthy enough to own land. They always worked. So I'm not going to sit here and apologize for the white race, Fernando. I'm going to tell you, you're out of line. I'm going to tell you to put the shoe on the other foot and imagine a white person writing this about your Hispanic race, saying that whatever we need to do, because all you know how to do is climb across a border into a better country and make it worse, because you get all these Hispanics that don't want to learn English. Obviously you did. I don't know. Maybe this was translated. And all we want to do is large-scale, non-Hispanic immigration, birth control, abortion, whatever it takes, so that we have far less Hispanics in the world, is what we needed. Could you imagine if somebody wrote that and you read it, how outraged you'd be? You're playing on the idea that whites are going to be just so, I guess, oppressed. You're going to press us into a feeling of guilt that we're going to remain silent about this. I've got another story for you. You want to stereotype all of the whites in the world? How about I stereotype you and tell you to stuff your sombrero on your chair and sit on it? That would be an unfair stereotype, wouldn't it, Fernando? Wouldn't it? If I told you just to go milk your donkey, that would be an unfair stereotype, wouldn't it? It doesn't feel good to be stereotyped and attacked when you have nothing to do with whatever your issue is. You have an issue, and you're taking it out on every white soul on planet Earth. And that disgusts me, Fernando. It absolutely, positively disgusts me. You are disgusting. That is an absolutely racist and an inflammatory racist little essay that you piece together, Fernando. If anyone of the white race ever wrote anything like that in America, they would actually be hung out by a yardarm. But you can get away with it because you're Hispanic. Unless that's a pseudonym, who knows? I'm not sure where you're from. Fernando Pena might be a pseudonym for, you know, Frank Jones. I don't know. You sicken me, Fernando. You absolutely sicken me. To come out with this, to say that whites are always oppressing and making things worse, I give you a perfect example. Right? Look at the nation of South Africa. Indigenous black population. The whites came in. In fact, they did enslave and they did segregate. They did. Which is an ugly thing. Once that ended, then the blacks came into power in what had been colonized as a British nation of sorts. Then all the whites essentially left government. Most of them left the country. And what's happened to the value and quality of life ever since then? I'm not saying whites are the key. I'm telling you, in a perfect example, that yes, you were right that some bad stuff happened under the hands of whites. They're not the only ones who do that sort of thing. Trust me. It shows throughout the world. But I will tell you this. Once they left the running of the government to the indigenous population, and the whites who were running the country left, the quality of life went down. Unemployment went up. Value of their dollar went down. So you tell me. Fernando, you make me sick for writing this. You really do. There's my retort. More information after the break when we return. This is your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio. Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. In the U.S. Senate, there is a Senate amendment known as S-845, which is called the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act of 2009. This bill would mandate that states that allow concealed weapons permits in their state, of which there are 48, that they would be mandated to honor concealed weapons permits from all the other states if someone were to have that permit. So if I have a permit here in Nevada, I could carry concealed in every state but the two that don't offer CCWs, and that's Illinois and Wisconsin. Same would go for you. If you have a CCW permit from your state or any other, you could carry in any state. Now, I am not a fan of this on the guise that the federal government's going to tell the states what to do. It's, as I look at it, unconstitutional within the 10th Amendment. I like the idea, however, being able to pack wherever I go, with the exception of those two states, and hopefully that'll get fixed at their state level soon enough. But essentially, it's a federal right to carry without actually having to launch a federal program. It's a backdoor national CCW Act. So I like the idea that you could be able to carry, but my real problem with this amendment is that it's usurped states' authority. Here is how it's written in the eyes of an anti-gun writer. Listen to this. Urgent action alert. Tell the U.S. Senate to oppose national hidden handgun law. Dangerous legislation is pending in the U.S. Senate that would force our communities to permit untrained and dangerous individuals from other states to carry loaded, hidden handguns in public. You get that? Untrained and dangerous individuals. States currently have the power and authority to determine their own carrying laws of CCWs, carrying concealed weapons policies. But Congress is suddenly overreaching its power to dictate that armed individuals from virtually any other state can cross state lines with their deadly weapons and carry a loaded gun in public, a draconian policy that would also fuel gun trafficking. S-485, the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act of 2009, could dramatically increase the number of individuals carrying concealed guns in public in your state. Now, that's a good thing. I don't know why they're trying to make it bad. S-845 would require states to accept concealed carry permits that are issued by other states. The practical effect of this change would be to reduce concealed carry permit regulations to the lowest common denominator. This is particularly dangerous, as many states have weak laws and issue individual permits after only a simple computerized background check. Imagine that. So, if you support this law, you can call the U.S. Capitol switchboard. Get a hold of your senator. Let them know what you think about S-845. The number is 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. There you go. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely, as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for spending your morning with me. I hope your day goes well, and I'll be back here with you tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.